Welcome to the We Collide podcast. We're a growing community of everyday chicks colliding with Jesus in our mess, our pain, our joy, and our stories. We value showing up as we truly are, so that's what you'll find here. Walls and masks being torn down so that we can allow Jesus to meet us where we truly are and hear about other women doing the same. We can't wait to collide with you.
I think making mistakes is that there's something wrong with that versus the idea that if I make mistakes, I'm growing, I'm learning. It actually shows that I'm pushing the edge of just manageable difficulty, which is where I really should be if I'm ever going to be growing.
Welcome to the We Collide podcast. I'm Willow Weston, the founder and director of Collide, and today I'm super excited to chat with Kelly Furlan and Breeze Potts. Kelly and Breeze are licensed mental health counselors, and they're both on our Collide Counseling Network list, and I admire and respect the work that they both do in this world, the way that they approach therapy and life and Jesus and just all the things. They recently taught an in-house class at our Collide office, Tackling Women's Struggles with Perfectionism. And it was so needed and such a popular topic that the class sold out. And so I thought, well, let's have a great conversation on the podcast so other people can join in on this topic and be impacted and learn from these two amazing counselors. So welcome to the podcast, you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Willow.
Yeah. So in your guys' class, you suggested that the definition of perfectionism is a disposition to regard anything short of perfection as unacceptable. And I'm wondering and hoping to hear from both of you, how does perfectionism play out in real live women's daily lives?
So I think perfectionism shows up all day, every day, in a variety of ways. But primarily, its impact is scaring you into not doing things, scaring you into not trying, scaring you into replaying, reworking conversations that have already happened or may happen in the future, trying to get it just right. And so it takes up an exhausting amount of time and energy.
It's interesting that you kept using the phrase scaring you. It's scaring you. It's scaring you into this, scaring you out of this. That's interesting. I've never put perfectionism and being scared together like that.
Yeah, I think part of what perfectionism does is it gives you the lie that not meeting that perfectionistic standard is somehow threatening to you, threatening in some way, and is, you know, totally unacceptable. But the truth is that it's absolutely not threatening, and it's totally acceptable to just do your best.
Breeze, how are you seeing perfectionism play out in women's daily lives?
I think I see perfectionistic tendencies, like Kelly said, kind of in everything people do. I mean, from how they're engaging with themselves to how they're meeting with their friends to how they're raising their kids. It's Kelly's word of scaring is it's helpful. Mm-hmm. The word that was coming to my mind as she was talking was limiting. I just find that perfectionistic tendencies are prevalent, but in a way that limits us from seeing our full value. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like seeing the glass half empty in my parenting. Like I'm a terrible mother versus like I'm doing my best. And I just feel like that mindset is pervasive in women's daily lives, whether we think it is or not. I think that's part of the problem is that it's actually so pervasive that we don't actually have awareness of it.
So Stephen Guys, who you guys mentioned, writes a book on behavioral change strategies, and he said perfectionism makes you stay home, not take chances, and procrastinate on projects. It makes you think your life is worse than it is. It keeps you from being yourself. It stresses you out. It tells you that good is bad, or at least not good enough, and it ignores the natural way in which things work. How are you both seeing this kind of perfectionism wreak havoc on people's lives, like Stephen suggests?
I think I'll jump in on that one. I think I see it most first in my own life, but then also in the lives of people around me, including my clients, by living according to what I called in our class the book of the shoulds or the should nots, mm-hmm. and using those as sort of guides for how I live. And the mantra is, well, I should be able to do that, even if that's not realistic for my body, like doing a yoga pose, I might not be that flexible, but like I'm telling
you, no, totally.
I should be able to do that and hold it for as long as the person next to me. I shouldn't feel this because that person doesn't seem to feel that emotion when this happens with their kids. And so that's how I see it wreaking havoc, because the shoulds and the should nots are not accurate. They're not real, but we believe them to be at our core.
Where are we getting those? Because as you're talking, I'm like shaking my head up and down. And I don't know, Kelly, if you are, but I'm like, we do that all the time. I should be like this. I shouldn't feel like this. Whose voices are those? Where are those coming from that's defining, like, we should be this certain way?
Well, I would say, I think it just comes from the pattern of comparing ourselves to everyone around us at all times. I mean, Kelly, jump in and add to that if you'd like.
That's exactly what I was thinking, was just comparison. And I think we're trained to compare. We're, comparing our bodies. We're comparing our relationships. Comparing our financial situation, comparing whether we go on vacation like other people go on vacation, whether we're as sick as other people are sick or as well as they're well. And so it really distances us from actually our intuiting what we need for ourselves, what our own limits and needs and abilities are, because we're always looking outward for someone else to tell us that we're good enough, or whether we're doing the yoga pose right, or whether we are raising our kids well enough, rather than sensing in to what our kids need or what our body can do, or whether we need rest or whether we need to push.
Yeah. It's interesting because as you're talking, I'm thinking about comparison and how interesting it is. And maybe you guys don't do this, so then I'll just self-confess and be the complete fool here. But as you're talking, I'm thinking the funny thing about comparison is we compare ourselves to everyone else's best in different areas and expect our whole self to be the best in all those areas, right? Like, yeah, so absolutely. You think about different categories of your life, like the super mom, right? Like she volunteers at the school. She's at all the things. She has her own, school mascot sweatshirt with her kids, it says their last name, the mom. Mm-hmm. And like, she makes the lunches for all the teachers. And you're like, oh, I'm not her. I suck. I need to be like her. But then you look at someone who's like, fully just a career mom and like rocking it and like ruling the world and, so successful. And you're like, I'm not her. And then you look at someone else, like you mentioned yoga. I was in a power yoga class one time. They crank up the heat. I don't even know what that is. And by the end of the class, the teacher's up on her forearm with her whole body like above that. And I'm still doing child pose. And then you're like, but and then you look at someone who looks amazing in jeans and you're like, I need to be like her, but she gets to eat cheeseburgers too. And like you pick parts of other people's best and you think you have to be all of those people's best in all areas of your life.
Right.
So it's really overwhelming because you might be nailing it in one or two areas of your life, but maybe not all the rest.
Well, totally. And there's no regard for where you might be nailing it because there's so much emphasis put on the areas where you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And that just perpetuates more of the shoulds and the should nots, more mm-hmm. of the comparison tendencies. Yeah, I think you said some really important things.
Oh, yeah. Self-confession, everybody. You guys mentioned that since the 90s, social scientists have observed the lives of individuals struggling with perfectionism. And the following are what those scientists notice, which are perfectionists have unrealistic expectations. They ruminate. They have a strong need for approval. They're very concerned about their mistakes. And they have doubts about their actions. Can you guys, I don't know, maybe if you each take a few of those, but walk us through what some of those are and what they can end up looking like in our lives. Like maybe we could start with unrealistic expectations.
So you want us to answer what are some unrealistic expectations?
Yeah. Like okay. What does it look like for unrealistic expectations to drive our life?
Well, it can be unrealistic expectations about the amount of energy that we have to do different things in our lives. So, the truth is that different people have different amounts of energy. So you look at some women who are getting up and working out and they are making, teacher lunches and running here, running there, and they've just got a lot of energy. And then you look at yourself and say, and you don't have as much energy, and you put an unrealistic expectation on yourself. Well, let me give a personal example of that. Even I suffered with, terrible migraines for years, and I would feel like such a bad mom. Because I would kind of forget that I had migraines. I had this expectation on myself that I would have ultimate patience, that I would be able to show up at sporting events, that I would enjoy hanging out on the playground with all the screaming. And then every now and then it would dawn on me that I was hanging out on a playground full of screaming people with a migraine. And I would think, wait, I am placing unrealistic expectations on myself right now. This is not reasonable. And it doesn't make me a bad person because I need to be in a quiet space.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Talk to me about ruminating and how that can actually be a problem in our lives that leads towards destructive perfectionism.
It takes you out of the present. That's for sure. Because ruminating is definitely not what's happening right now. If you're ruminating on anything, you're chewing on something that is already over with, or you're chewing on something that hasn't even happened yet.
So you're chewing on the past, or you're chewing on hypotheticals about the future.
Yeah.
Right. Usually worst case scenarios that never happen.
I'm so good at that. I should get an award for that.
And I think a different word for that, what I was going to say is just, it's just overthinking about the past or the future. But I think that could sometimes be a helpful way of looking at it.
Yeah. And I think that's a really helpful thing to mention, because oftentimes overthinking can be used as a tool for certain things. Like, when you are in charge of emergency management at your job, or you are supposed to brainstorm a ton of million ideas. But then when you're overthinking every single decision in your life, it can be
overwhelming.
Yeah. And keep you from risking, keep you from making decisions, keep you from moving.
Right.
What about having a strong need for approval? You guys talked in the class about seeking approval at the cost of our own self-confidence. I'm wondering, what are some indications that someone would be doing that?
I think trying to seek approval comes by some of that comparison that we were talking about earlier. So trying to look like the lady next to me in the yoga class, like trying to do the pose like her, because I would want the teacher's approval of doing it right, or, for as long as is asked or whatever. So I think depending on the circumstance, I think the need for approval comes from how we're comparing ourselves to those around us. So if I'm a student in a class, it's like, how am I comparing myself to my peers and also seeking approval to be noticed by the teacher? And that gets complicated, but I think that's the ways in which we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I'm thinking two things. One, just to sort of also name the fact that that there is something valuable about having approval, in the sense that one of, I think, our greatest fears as a people, for good reason, is social isolation. So the idea of being rejected or not included, or, and really underneath that is not having worth and value, not being loved, is a very core fear that we carry around. It can get out of hand. And I think the word that we normally put on that in sort of like the psychological world is codependency. When need for approval turns into, I don't know what I need. I can't stand for my own values because I'm always looking to what other people want from me. So if it makes the pastor at my church happy, if I say yes to volunteering for this program, I do it. If the lady at the checkout says, would you like to donate to Make-A-Wish Foundation? Even though my family's really struggling, you know, financially, and I hit no, what kind of human am I? So I have to say yes. And, you know, it gets, there are all kinds of examples of when we say yes, but our yes is in a way coerced, because we don't feel the freedom to say no and still be loved, still be acceptable, still be included.
Which is such an exhausting, it can become so exhausting to try to get everyone in your life to approve of every decision you make.
Yeah.
I think it's
because you can get one person's approval by a certain thing you do, and you lose the other person's by the same action.
Perfectionists, these social scientists say, are very concerned over mistakes. Kelly, I'm going to ask you, why are we so afraid of making mistakes?
I think at the bottom of that is that we think it's absolutely unacceptable to make mistakes, because it says something about our value and our worth. There was research that came out, and I'm going to forget the woman's name, which is absolutely horrible to not give credit where it came from. But she wrote a book about growth mindset versus fixed mindset. And, you know, some of the things that came out in that were this idea that if I'm not good at something the first time around, then I just shouldn't do that anymore. So if a little kid shows some aptitude at basketball, then definitely put that kid in more basketball and just keep doing basketball and don't ever try anything else. Even if you love to swim and you weren't good at it the first time, give up. Because we think making mistakes is that there's something wrong with that, versus the idea that if I make mistakes, I'm growing, I'm learning. It actually shows that I'm pushing the edge of just manageable difficulty, which is where I really should be if I'm ever going to be growing. I should not be living in a state of doing everything really well, or I'm just not living.
We just had an event a couple weeks ago, and we were looking at the passage where Jesus comes out to the disciples. There's a storm, they're in a boat, and Peter says, if it's you, tell me to come. Jesus, and Jesus says, come. And Peter actually, we don't make it about this too often because we focus on his mistake, but he actually walks on water, which is absolutely incredible. He defies gravity, but we never talk about that. We never talk about how he walks on water. We talk about how he sinks. And the interesting thing, and what we suggested at the conference, is that there's actually sinking is a gift, because it was actually sinking. And when God, you know, Jesus grabs his hand and they go back and they sit in the boat, and Jesus has a conversation with him, that by sinking, he actually realized the power of faith. The reason why he was able to walk was because he had this incredible faith for a moment, then got distracted by the wind, then he sank. But sinking actually is what taught him the power of faith. And I think making mistakes is so much about like failing forward, realizing like it's okay to make mistakes and allow God to use that to shape and refine you. But we live in this culture, and you guys mentioned it twice earlier already in this podcast. You both said it separately. Why is doing my best not enough?
Because it's not the thing that's valued by our culture. I mean, doing my best in the Facebook world has to look like, you know, wearing all the hats, like you were talking about, the career mom, the school mom, the like the best friend who's making dinners for all the sick people. Like, I mean, it's just doing all things really, really well. And that might be overextending myself, right? So mm-hmm. doing my best is to scale back and admit I can't do all those things. Mm-hmm. But I think we live in a culture that doesn't really give space for that. We kind of have to fight to have that space. Mm-hmm. And permission comes from ourselves first. But I think when we receive affirmation for doing all those things, it's hard to sort of come out publicly and say, like, I can't do all those things. Just kidding. Mm-hmm. Because it feels like we're not measuring up. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Kelly, jump in.
Well, I would even say, I mean, this might sound really harsh, but I was just thinking it's actually a form of idolatry in a way. It's myself as idol because I don't accept that I'm limited. And I do think that that comes from culture. Culture, you know, places these expectations through media in particular, at least in our technological culture, sets the bar really high. And of course, it's photoshopped and curated everyone's lives. But at the same time, I think there's a real humility about being able to say, I accept that I'm limited, that I'm a human being, and my good enough is good enough.
Doing your best is actually something we talk a lot about with our kids as far as when I think about grades, and everyone has their own philosophy, and mine might totally suck, and that's fine. Don't do it. But this is what we do, which is when report cards come out, and a lot of people are checking, you can check now online at our kids' school and see how they're doing. And then, you know, the kids are grounded for weeks or whatever. But we don't do a ton of that because really the consequences fall on them. But both, we have two different kids and they get completely different grades. And we don't sort of reward one over the other or shame one over the other because their grades are way not as good as the other. We ask them both, did you do your best? And even though their grades are so different, when they say they do their best, we kind of know if they've done their best. And they say, yeah, I've done my best. And one kid could say, I did my best and got a C, and another kid could say, I did my best and got an A, and we believe them both. And that's just because they have different capacities, different giftings. And whereas I see other parents who are like, you didn't do your best, you didn't work hard enough, that you shouldn't have B's. And, you know, sometimes a B is your best. Mm-hmm. And I think I've grown up in a culture where mm-hmm. nothing less than 4.0 A is acceptable.
Well, and I think your theme you're mentioning is that we have to really know ourselves to know what our best is.
Yes.
And I think when we are stuck in this pattern of comparing ourselves to everyone else, we can't actually know ourselves or our limits. And so we get deceived into believing that my limits look like everyone else's when actually mm-hmm. they don't. Mm-hmm. And so I think it takes a lot of work to know ourselves at our core and know what my limits, as Kelly said, are, and know where I'm overextending myself in ways that are unhelpful. But I mean, at the core of all of this, I think perfectionistic tendencies, as Kelly said, is like a distorted relationship with oneself. I think mm-hmm. that's where we have to know ourselves better mm-hmm. in order to be better mm-hmm. and give more space to be human.
Mm-hmm. It's okay to recognize, and you said this, Kelly, that I'm limited, and then Breeze to ask, what are my limitations? Mm-hmm. And kind of choose to get to know yourself and be okay with saying, this is who I am and where I'm at right now.
Well, and I was thinking, even for the A student, even the student who gets an A, that might not even be their best. It might have been beneath their best to get that A. But really, if they are going to use their talents to the utmost, it looks like investing more because they have more.
Right. Or helping others to bump their C up to a B, right? While they get an A. Hey, right on. The last one of the five things that social scientists observed about perfectionists is that perfectionists have doubts about actions. How do you guys see that playing out in people's lives? You mentioned people being scared. How else do they have doubts about their actions?
I guess the word that comes to mind is just like insecure to act. They're just like, there's a hesitancy. We sort of second guess whether what I'm doing is going to be received by people around me, or measure up in some weird way. So I think there's this like split second, like, oh, I'm not sure. Sort of a internal feeling. That's what's coming to my mind. Mm. Kelly, what do you think?
Well, you can, yeah, one of my favorite lines from this really old animated movie called Robots is there's a character in there that's done by the voice of Robin Williams, and he says, never try, never fail. Those are the words I live by. Which is, it kind of gets to this doubts about actions, because I can say, I can talk about all kinds of big plans or dreams or what I could be capable of or what I want to do. But if I don't start, I don't ever have to risk that I didn't have what it took. Or if I procrastinate, then I always have the fact that I ran out of time to explain why things didn't go well. Or the not finishing is I can get really close to the end, but again, I didn't finish. If I had finished, then maybe I would have gotten a better grade. Does that sound a little strange? I mean, it's another way of like, I'm not going to fully invest, because if I fully invest and I find that I come up short or shorter than I want, that would be devastating. That would be humiliating. It's better to just live in a state of never starting, never finishing.
You guys are blowing my mind about perfectionism. Like, I think I had perfectionism in a box. And here's the box I put it in. They have to look perfect, which I think applies, but not only. But I think I used to think it's people who have to look perfect and their houses have to be perfectly in place, clean, perfect. Those are like how I would describe perfectionism, like people who are perfectionists. But this list that we've just gone through, these five things about unrealistic expectations, overthinking, ruminating, need for approval, concern over mistakes, doubts with actions, literally... And now I'm starting to feel like I might be a perfectionist. That's diagnosed. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to move away from the social scientist list and ask you a few other questions. Brené Brown notes that perfectionism is a shield against embarrassment. She says, if I can't be seen, I can't be embarrassed. What's at play in our absolute resolve to live not embarrassing ourselves?
Well, it's like middle school. It's basically like we're all still in middle school. We all still don't want to be at the table with the people that nobody wants to be with. We don't want to say anything that's going to embarrass us and give somebody else cause to call us out or put us down or roll their eyes. That kind of stuff is really, really painful. But I think one of the things that Breeze and I talked about at the workshop as well was that things that hurt don't actually necessarily harm us, that sometimes going through little bits of rejection and recognizing that our worth is other, you know, that the foundation of our worth is not in what other people say about us, it actually makes us more resilient. It makes us stronger. If we always avoid embarrassment, then our ability to manage embarrassment only weakens.
Yeah, I feel like we do a lot of work around here with women who feel stuck in one way or another. And I'm thinking of a specific person, but I'll have these conversations with, say, a woman who feels like she's been doing the same thing for the last 15 years and she's bored with her own life. She's discontent. She wants something more, and she's known it for so long. And then when I ask her, you know, have you made a list of what you feel passionate about and what you feel good at to like break out of this stuck place that you've been in? And her response was, I haven't even thought about that. I haven't made that list. I haven't thought about that. And it's just kind of an interesting thing because you look at someone like that and like, she's so afraid to make a mistake that she's paralytic and she's not moving. And then she continues to be discontent, but maybe the best mistake she could make is to plop out of that place she's in and take a step out of it and try something. Even if it fails, she's not staying stuck.
Or something that's coming to mind is like, who's measuring what mistake is? Because I think in my mind, I'm already kind of reframing the mistake is all, it's kind of a win as you're posing the question, like for my own personal growth.
Well, yeah, because so many women, I mean, that brings up, and I've experienced this before, but I've seen it where, you know, you can have conflict in a friendship and you're so afraid to say something because you're assuming the other person won't be able to handle the conversation. So you don't have the conversation, but by not having the conversation, so much distance grows between you. So like, it might be worth making a mistake to have the conversation. I mean, there's so many things.
Right.
What are some examples that you guys have seen in your own lives or maybe clients that you work with? Obviously, you can't share details, but in general, examples of mistakes that you or others have made that were worth making?
I've had clients who I think, you know, might be concerned that their partner's having an affair and wondering whether they should bring that up. Or having experienced a distancing in the relationship for a really long time, but not saying, hey, it seems like something is off here. I'm noticing this. I'm noticing that. That's, you might say that's a mistake worth making to step into a very difficult and potentially disruptive conversation, but also fruitful, like Breeze is saying. It could be the best mistake you ever made, was to kind of break the silence.
We have to first be open to receiving our worth from God. So, I mean, I think that takes some work to be open to that and not sort of bat that away. But then I also think we have to come to believe that we have worth within ourselves in addition to our worth coming from God. I think those two things have to kind of be at play with one another. And that's probably another podcast in and of itself, but I think those two things work together to create a foundation that allows us to work against some of these perfectionistic tendencies and give ourselves permission to just be who we are and find value in who we are today.
I think our worthiness is inherent in the fact that we are a creation of the God of the universe, that the mere fact that he made us and called us worthy is the only thing that gives us worth, but it's the ultimate thing that gives us worth. And anytime we try and base our worthiness on anything else other than that, it's going to be fruitless. And the other thing is that I love about the idea of really rooting our identity and our worthiness in being a creation of the God of the universe is that it's not even a point worth arguing anymore. If we can just sort of say, it just is, I'm just worthy. This is like a useless conversation because, you know, batting back and forth, whether I am or not, because he says I'm worthy and he gave everything to show it. There's a little line that we talked about in the workshop where we said the worth of a thing is demonstrated by what someone's willing to pay for it. And we see the efforts of Jesus going to the cross and paying the ultimate sacrifice of his life because every single one of us is worth it.
Can I add to that?
Totally.
I was going to say, I think I absolutely agree with what Kelly's saying. I think we have to first be open to receiving our worth from God. So, I mean, I think that takes some work to be open to that and not sort of bat that away. But then I also think we have to come to believe that we have worth within ourselves in addition to our worth coming from God. I think those two things have to kind of be at play with one another. And that's probably another podcast in and of itself. But I think those two things work together to create a foundation that allows us to work against some of these perfectionistic tendencies and give ourselves permission to just be who we are and find value in who we are today.
What Breeze is talking about can almost be seen also in our ability to receive forgiveness. So there's a certain amount of forgiveness that we receive from God, but even when we can say, oh, yeah, yeah, I know God forgives me because he's so good, but I can't really forgive myself.
Yeah,
I can't
let myself. As you guys are talking, I'm just thinking, I continue think that's to what I love about Jesus
berate myself
most,
and hold my head in shame.
I learned
shame
early on when I met Jesus. If you want to know what God's like, look at Jesus.
Do,
and when you look at Jesus,
done.
He lives his
and
life.
And so there is that kind of element
saying,
of
like,
receiving
look what I would do
and
for
also
like,
granting to myself.
For all
forgiveness
of us women who are chasing
there.
After our worth to just
or the
hear
worth that's
you're
already there.
You're just already loved.
Yeah.
Like you're already loved. And that's something I think, I don't know, we all need to hear multiple times a day, every 5 minutes. I'm going to ask you guys one more question to close, just because I think you've given us so much to think about and really help evaluate whether or not we're struggling with perfectionism in our own lives. And connecting perfectionism to this chase after our worthiness. What are some good questions that each of you can offer that we can ask ourselves to help identify if we're trying to chase our worthiness from another place than this inherent sense that we are worthy because we are God's children? What are some good questions just to help each one of us identify? Am I trying to find my worth somewhere else?
I mean, you could maybe ask yourself, how much time am I spending thinking about whether other people like me or approve of me? And what might I do with that time, or how might I feel if I didn't devote the time to thinking about whether other people approve of me or what they think of me?
I think I have this conversation with myself and my clients a lot, which is I just simply have to check in with myself. Like, where am I? Like, just get a sense of what kind of patterns am I engaging in? And then I have to start to ask myself questions about, am I engaging in things that are overextending myself? And if I am, how do I become more aware of those and check in about whether those are things I'm able or willing to do? And when I can ask myself those two questions, I can tend to come back to a more grounded, centered place where I can be more in touch with, wait, where are my limits and what works for me and what doesn't? And it's in that place that I'm more open to receiving my inherent value. When I start to get way rippled out in doing things just because my neighbor's doing it, I really lose sense of myself. So I think first step is you just got to like pause, literally pause and check in with yourself. And then I think I would encourage you to check in about the idea of limits and how are you overextending yourself.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking as you guys are talking about myself, and a question that comes to my mind, I'm not a counselor, but I'm going to throw one into a good self-reflection question is, why am I doing all this hustling? Because I think there's kind of this hustle that we're all a part of. And as you guys were talking about, if my hustle, my chase, my pursuit, everything I'm doing that keeps me so busy and overextended and trying so hard and people pleasing and all that, if that's not about loving God and loving my neighbor, and if it doesn't come down to those two things and it's about some other motivations, that's probably a good indicator that I'm chasing my worthiness and trying to find it in other people. Mm-hmm. Well, you guys, I love having you on this podcast. I love hanging out with you guys. I love what you do. I love the people that you are. And I'm so grateful for the way that you speak into people's lives and bring healing in their lives. I'm so grateful that we can send people who come to us for counseling to you guys. I wish we could multiply you and like make thousands of you so everyone in the world could experience how amazing you guys are. Thank you guys for being on here. I'm very grateful. And for those of you listening, if today something was brought up in you where you recognize, hey, I might need to work on this. I might need to get some help. I might need to find a counselor and actually process some of this stuff. I want to encourage you to do that wherever you are. If you don't know how to begin to do that, contact us at info@weekallied.net and we'll help you to do that. And in the meantime, keep colliding with Jesus, knowing you are already loved, you are already worthy, and you don't have to seek perfectionism to be loved and worthy. Have a good week, and we'll catch you next week.
Thanks for tuning in. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram at we.collide, on Facebook as at @WeCollideWomen, and you can also visit our website at wecollide.net to find our blog, resources, event information, and more. One last thing. If you enjoyed this episode, would you take a few seconds and leave us a review? It seems like such a small act, but reviews help us to keep producing this content and help other women find it too. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode and letting us walk with you as you seek and collide with Jesus.